Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's broadcast of the LIS Classcast on LIS Radio. Tonight's production is coming from the beautiful Verizon Room in Townsend Hall and is part of the CISLCast program at the University of Missouri. Tonight's host is Library Media Specialist Beth Wakely and her guest from Follett, Laura Hammerschmidt.
Good evening, Laura. Thank you, first of all, for agreeing to be part of this program tonight. My students have a variety of backgrounds, but very little in a school library, and they need to know how helpful it is to have a sales rep like you are from a company like Follett that can help them when they start their job.
Thank you, Beth. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, one of the things I think my students might find interesting is how you became a Follett rep and something about the history of the company.
Okay, well, first I'll start with the history of Follett. Follett was established in 1873 by a Follett family member, and I think his name was Garth Follett, and a man named C.M. Barnes, and they actually started selling books out of Mr. Barnes' garage.
Oh.
And it wasn't to libraries per se. Then they were selling everything. They were selling textbooks. They were selling books to bookstores, just about anything that they could get their hands on. In 1940, the company split off, and Barnes later moved to New York and became famous for Barnes & Noble. It's that Barnes family.
Oh.
And then the Follett family in 1940 decided that they would focus on the K-12 school market. So Follett has been serving the K-12 market for 66 years, and it's still a privately held family-owned business. It's now in the fourth generation of family members at Follett. Unfortunately, I'm not one of them. I got my start. My background is in business administration, and when I left college, I went to University of Oklahoma and had been seeking a job back in my home in St. Louis, and went to a company called Sandvall Incorporated, which is a bookbindery that had, after that, been purchased by The Book Source, which is also a book wholesaler in St. Louis. I stayed there for 8 years, and an opportunity was presented to me from Follett Library Resources to be an account manager covering three states, Arkansas, Southern Illinois, and half of Missouri. And so I have been with Follett now for 16 years.
Well, my goodness, and I've known you for a lot of those years.
I think
years.
You have.
Yes, quite some time, in a variety of schools,
mm-hmm.
And you've been very helpful.
Thank you.
I used Follett when I lived in Northern Illinois, so I was familiar with the company, and then I was just very pleased that you were my sales rep here. And I think one of the things I've always enjoyed is that you are a reader. You know the books that you are representing. And I think that's important because if the sales rep knows what they really are talking about, it comes through.
I think it gives a little credibility to what you do, but it's amazing how in the business a lot of the representatives you'll come across are not readers, and they're just trying to sell you a product.
I have run into more than my share of those kinds, not necessarily from Follett, but from all over.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing you learn when you're in a school library, everyone assumes you have these huge budgets, and so they're trying to get you to purchase from them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, some of the things that I think my students need to know is when they're a new library media specialist and they walk into a school, what are some of the things you would suggest they should do with that first order before they send it out?
Well, the first thing I'd recommend is to not feel hurried or rushed to send out that first order. Get to know your collection. What have you got to work with? Where are the needs? You want to pull your faculty and staff and try and get a handle on the curriculum because your primary focus is to support them. That's what you want to do.
Exactly.
And collaborate with those teachers. Find out what needs have not been met prior to your arrival, and then start planning. You might have a budget that's $2,000, you might have a budget that's $20,000, and you've got to decide what are your priorities. And it's okay to put off ordering until you feel like you have a handle on where your needs are and what products and what's going to best suit filling those gaps to support the curriculum.
All right. And one thing my students have asked about are the different types of bindings.
Okay.
When they had an assignment where they went into Tidal Wave, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a while, and they noticed there were different types of bindings that they could select for different prices for
mm-hmm.
the same book.
Okay. I'll address that. Primarily what they probably saw was something called Follett Bound versus a publisher's hardcover or a library binding. Follett Bound is a paperback that we have converted to hardcover. What we have done is the original paperback binding is removed, and it's actually cut off. And a fanned adhesive binding or a sewn binding is used to replace the original binding. And that's why it's called pre-bound. It's rebound before it ever gets into the hands of the end user. The original covers are removed, and then they're scanned. Sometimes they're mounted on a cloth cover, and then that is applied to something called binder's board, which is the board that you normally see that makes up a hardcover book. And what most companies do is put their own name to it. We call it Follett Bound. You'll see Duraclad. You'll see Permabound. It's generally the same process, and almost every company out there is giving a lifetime binding guarantee on those books. So you're still starting with the paperback paper, mm-hmm. but you're converting it and reinforcing that binding. Now, the other types of bindings that you'll see out there are library binding, and this is something different than what you'll see in like a bookstore or a Walmart. These are publisher's editions that are specifically constructed to be durable in the library. They're usually sewn. Sometimes they have that adhesive fan binding or a glued binding, but then it's reinforced because it is meant to be circulated numerous times versus the one-time purchase. You take it home, read it, and put it on a shelf.
Right.
They usually have what's called a reinforcing strip that runs down the inside of the cover. The fiction books from a trade publisher usually have a dust jacket on that, and that's that wraparound cover that you'll see that covers the board of the book. And usually if it is a curriculum-type nonfiction book, those will have a scanned cover with a picture on the front of it.
Okay.
And then the other thing you have, of course, are trade paperbacks. It's a quality paperback. It's got an adhesive binding. The binding is a glued binding, and it has a heavier weight of paper versus a mass-market paperback, which is what you'd pick up for your pleasure reading, you know, the smaller size paperback book.
Right. And books that students might buy at a book fair are in the cheaper binding.
Right. That's your trade paper and your mass market paperback. And sometimes you can also see something that would be called like a spiral bound, or if you have a book fair, something like that. And, of course, we all know what a spiral-bound book is. That would
right.
be like a cookbook or professional title, and
mm-hmm.
those are generally paperback as well.
Right. Okay, when people order their books from you, or when school librarians order them, I like to have my books covered in Mylar. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay. Mylar is a plastic... not a film, but a plastic that comes on a roll. And what we do is we take that dust jacket off the book, and we cut this plastic to wrap around the jacket and fold it over and tape it down. So what it does is prevents that original dust jacket from tearing, and it's called Mylar. It doesn't tear. It's very strong. It can sometimes discolor or scratch after a lot of years of wear, but generally it's going to protect that dust jacket, and that's what Mylar does.
Right, and it makes your books look a lot more attractive.
Right.
Too. And I think little children especially, when they have a book that's covered in Mylar, tend to take better care of the book. It just seems like it's more special,
mm-hmm.
and so they treat them that way.
Right. I wouldn't recommend it for a book that doesn't have a jacket.
Oh, no.
But I do recommend it for books that have the original dust jacket.
Okay. And one thing that I like about Follett is when you send in your processing, they will attach the Mylar for you. It's not difficult to put a Mylar jacket on, but it is time-consuming, and Follett mm-hmm. does a very nice job, and they tape them tightly because sometimes it is difficult to get it taped exactly the right way. And as you and I both know, but other people may not realize, books aren't always square.
Right.
So that's always a challenge when you're doing it yourself to get that jacket on the right way. Although, mm-hmm. you know, you can do it, but it takes quite a while to become an expert.
And we have people whose job it is, unfortunately, although they're paid very well, and they stand there and do that all day. They've got it down to a science, and they can do it in a fraction of the time that it would take somebody in the library to do it.
Right, exactly. Plus, it takes a lot of space to put those on.
It does.
You know, because you have to put the whole thing out. All right, let's talk once again, go back to we're a brand new person. We're going into an established school. And one thing I learned the hard way is you always want to call someone like Follett and ask them to read back what the specifications are that are on file for your school. So maybe we should go over what specifications mean.
Okay, that's fine. And like you said, don't ever assume. And also, if there's something that you don't like, it's your library now,
mm-hmm.
and change it. If you don't like the location of where the barcode has been placed on the book, this is one of the specifications that would be on file. When the books are processed, what we're normally doing is applying a spine label to the book, and that's going to have your call number on it. We're going to put a barcode on the book. Sometimes it's on the front, sometimes it's on the back. It could be horizontal, it could be vertical. It just comes down to whatever the librarian has picked as their preference. It normally will have the Mylar around the dust jacket, any kind of reading program label that they might want to have attached would be there, and then it's their data for their automated library system, and we call those MARC records, and that means Machine Readable Cataloging. It's MARC, and it's generally capitalized, so you'll see that a lot. But what you want to do is go over with the customer service rep or the local representative that you're working with and just make sure that you understand what that company has on file. And if there's something that you want to change, just make your wishes known that they change the processing specifications that they have set up for your building.
Okay, and I'm going to give an example just in case some of my students don't know of something you might want to look for.
Okay.
Because in the St. Louis area, biographies are filed three different ways.
Yes, they are.
And you can have them as 92, you can have them as a large B, or you can put them in the place they would be according to whatever they are famous for.
Mm-hmm.
So a baseball player would be with baseball, a president would be with whatever era of history he was associated with, something like that. That's something to find out. Where do you want something like that to be? Because if you're not aware of it, and if you don't tell your jobber like Follett that I want my biographies this way, they could come any one of those three ways.
That's right, and there really isn't a right or wrong answer.
No.
But one thing I would suggest that they do is be consistent within the school district.
Absolutely.
That you're in. If somebody's using a B, then continue that to your building, especially if you have elementary school students who've been taught that way, and you're at
yes.
a middle school. Don't change that and confuse them.
Even for a stronger reason, eventually there's going to be union catalogs everywhere.
Probably so.
You know, so we're going to, and I know even in some states like Ohio, they're statewide. The schools are part of the university and the public libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that your cataloging is correct and consistent, because otherwise your user will be very confused.
Right.
Okay, we casually mentioned barcode symbology, but this is something new to new librarians, too. And there is more than one type of barcode.
There's
so
a
do you
lot.
Wanna, right.
The main thing, without going into too much depth
right.
about
we don't
how
do,
the lines are arranged,
right, right.
is to know that there are differences and to know what your system requires. And you can do a couple of things. You can see what's already set up on file from your book vendors, or you can contact your software company or look in your manual. It's generally going to have that information on there for you. So you could have something that might be called a Code 39. You could have something that's called a Follett Classic. There's different lengths of barcodes as well. You might have a 6-digit barcode. You might have a 13-digit barcode with a school location code that's generally a 4-digit code that's embedded in that in that barcode that identifies which building that you are at within the district. So you want to just make sure that you have consistency there, that you understand what symbology your software is requiring, because if you don't know and you buy the wrong one, you go to scan that book, and it's not going to scan.
Right, and I'm going to just butt in right here and mention that when you get an order from anyone, scan a book right away and make sure that the barcode is correct, because they all are pretty similar when you look at them.
They are. It's hard to tell when you look at it what the symbology is. It's more of a fact of knowing. And also know, just in case I forget to mention this later, if you do make a mistake, if you use a number that's already used, and that's something that you want to keep track of too,
what numbers
you have available, what's been used. I had someone from Southern Missouri call me today in a panic, and she was a brand new librarian. She's been an English teacher in the classroom, and she said, oh my goodness, I didn't know those numbers had already been used. My books came, what can you do? Mm-hmm. It's very easy for us to pull that order in, rerun, and fix that problem.
Mm-hmm.
She was afraid that, and it was a considerable size order, that she was going to have to go in and manually change everything and reprint. And so we can just rerun new ones and send a new data for her that will override what she had already loaded and correct the mistake.
Right, and because that is important.
Mm-hmm.
Always make sure, because it's real easy to have something be wrong. Also, I always tell my students that when they're checking in their books, really an adult should be doing it. Sometimes kids want to help you, but you're better off having an adult check in those new books on that new order just to make sure that everything does look correct.
Right.
And I'll be honest, one time, I don't know if you remember, where I had the book with a nice English cover and the inside was Old Dutch or something.
Right.
It was a strange thing. And I had opened that book before, but I sure didn't catch it until a child came to check it out. And Follett replaced that book without any problem.
And these books are processed by hand, so
there's
human error. There might be two books that are in a row, one beside another, and the barcodes can easily get switched on those. So it is nice to do a visual check and just make sure that that barcode matches the title of that book.
Yes. Yeah, and you get very quick at doing things like that. All right, I had another student ask me to ask you about e-books, because that is in all the literature now. There are a variety of ways to obtain e-books. Let's talk about the ones that Follett sells.
Okay. The first thing I'd like to say about e-books that helps you kind of wrap your brain around the whole concept is it's just a book in a different kind of binding, and you're accessing it electronically. Now, with what Follett has to offer, we're not selling collections. We're selling individual titles of e-books, and we just got into this within the past, I guess we're into our fourth year of e-books now. It's accessed through the OPAC system, the online catalog program in the library. And what would happen is that the student would find the book in the catalog and then click the link in the tag of the machine readable cataloging record, the MARC record, and then that links them up to the book, which is actually housed on Follett's database. So you do have to have access to the library's catalog. And then you can either download it or just read it. You can check it out or not check it out. We're seeing it used in a lot of different ways. We're seeing reference books being bought in ebook format. The prices are running pretty much close to the same price as the print edition. We're seeing picture books being bought where, as opposed to what is a big book, let's say, in front of a room full of kindergartners that can't read, where traditionally a librarian might hold up the book and read to the class, well, now it's being projected onto a smart board or a screen. Some of the benefits of using these e-books are that they can't get lost, they can't get stolen, they don't take up space on the shelf. Once you buy it, it is yours forever. The question came up, well, what if a new edition comes out? It's just the same as if it were a print. You buy the new edition. And the whole concept is one book, one user. It's just like you would have the book on the shelf to check out.
Right. And some people are confused, and they confuse them with databases. But no, it's a book. It's just in a different format.
Just think of it in a different type of binding.
Right. And that's a good way to put it, too. Also, you need to be able to have access to your catalog from home to really make these useful.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't access your catalog from home, then the students can only use these books within the school, within wherever the internet access is.
Right.
And will they want to be sitting there reading a book? Although I can see with the smart boards that more and more schools are having that this would be great for using an e-book.
It's good for instructional purposes. Let's say they're doing a unit on butterflies, and there's a handful of books on butterflies in the library, but you've got this electronic book that you can access through the school's OPAC. This teacher could bring up this book on a smart board and discuss the various butterflies in a classroom instructional setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a lot of usage that way of the e-books.
Okay, I'm watching our clock, and I thought we
I thought we had trouble
filling our time, and now I've got this whole list of things I want to cover. I'd like you to cover audiobooks, because I know that Follett is selling a new kind of audiobook, which intrigues me. I want to see it. I would like you to also mention how it is delivered to the library, because I found that fascinating.
It's very cool. This is a company, the product is called Playaway. And what it is, it's a self-contained audiobook, and the student can wear it around his or her neck, and they can use their earbuds from their MP3 players, or it comes with that. But the whole book is self-contained, and it's battery-operated. You can start and stop the book. You can bookmark it. You can replay. It's just a real new, unique way of selling an audiobook, because it used to be that the audiobooks were on tapes or they were on CDs, or and had something that had to be loaded, but this is a new technology. They've started selling these in bookstores, but now they're trying to expand them out into the school market, and they're kind of testing the waters. They've Follett's the only company right now that are carrying these. And we're trying to build a collection of titles that is geared toward the K-12 market.
Okay, and something you had mentioned to me, too, was it's delivered in a case that looks like a...
Like a VHS case.
Which is good, because when you're ordering something unique, like an audiobook, you have to think of how am I going to store this and make it accessible.
Right.
You know, that I had thought, without knowing that you'd put it into one of those hanging bags on a hanging rack, like I used to do with my books on tape, so the kids could check them out and take the cassette player, and sit there and do that. But this is great that they would be in a case like a
And it's got the lanyard, it's got the battery, it's got the earbuds, and somebody said, well, what about these earbuds and multiple users and a couple of things? There's covers you can buy for those that are disposable. You can buy a pack of 50 and changes out. You can clean them, or most of the students have their own anyway from their MP3 players.
Right, and there are some schools that require students to have their own. I know that they're supposed to have them. That's part of their school supplies.
Right.
And they get them at an inexpensive price, and the student is supposed to have it there.
So
okay, I had another question that I want to make sure we cover before we run out of time. And there was a question about how does Follett decide which books it's going to sell, which publishers?
Well, we have buyers that are focused on different levels. We have young adult buyers. We have children's buyers. When a book is being released for the K8 market. We're picking up just about everything that's out there. When it's coming out at the secondary level, we're a little more selective about what we buy. We're looking at how much money the publisher is putting into the promotion of the book. We're, of course, looking at reviews from the various review sources that are out there. Is it a known author? And so that's how we're determining the quantities, especially, that we buy. We might buy a much smaller quantity if it's a new author or something, or a smaller publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But with the exception of, like World Book and a couple of very specialized reference publishers, a wholesaler is generally going to have just about everything that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. And frequently, they can get it for you if you ask,
yeah,
if it's
mm-hmm.
something new, too. I know someone had asked how ordering had changed. It's so much easier today than it ever was in the past. And I can just see, I don't know if you remembered that I beta tested the Tidal Wave when it was
right.
on a CD, and I had to bring it home because I didn't have a computer at school
mm-hmm.
yet, and then put it on my computer at home so that I could do one massive order that I was lucky enough to be able to do. But it's so much easier. Would you just quickly, because we're running out of time, talk about TidalWise and TidalWave, because TidalWise
okay.
is just a great concept.
Well, TidalWise does an analysis of a collection, and you mentioned earlier, how do you decide where to begin?
Mm-hmm.
TidalWise will go in and analyze the collection and tell you the balance of your collection, identify the age of the collection. It's a great resource that your local Follett rep can walk you through the steps on that, but it'll really guide you in the right direction. I think the main thing to address when you're talking about how is ordering changed, virtually every reputable company out there now has their inventory online. You're not having to dig through the catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
Our catalogs used to be printed every June. Well, our online TidalWave is updated every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So that affects the fill rates that you get because the books that are no longer available are dropped daily off of that.
You know, we haven't defined fill rate.
Okay. Fill rate is just what percentage of the things that you order actually come in.
All right.
So of course, you're trying to shoot for 100%.
Right. And we did not also mention when you send an order in to put a do not exceed amount, which is the amount of your budget, which I briefly mentioned in class, but I've not really talked about ordering a percentage above.
We usually suggest that you over-order by about 10%. That way your funds that you have allocated on that purchase order will get filled to 100%, so you don't have to wait for a lot of things to straggle in. You're going to say, okay, I've got $1,000 to spend. Here's $1,100 worth of titles. And you can, of course, always prioritize your first choices.
Mm-hmm.
But that way it's filled up, it's filled quickly, and it's out the door.
Right, exactly. Because the one thing you don't want to do, I always tell people, is don't let them back order. Just take what you can get mm-hmm. in that order, and you can always reorder.
Right.
Right. But know the policies of your school, too. All right, we have not talked about TidalWave, maybe a minute or so as I watch my clock here.
Well, TidalWave is basically our catalog online, TidalWave.com, and I understand the students have
right.
logged in and
mm-hmm.
accessed that. So you can search for specific titles. You can use it as a collection development tool if you don't know titles but you know your subject area. You can make it specific to review sources, to interest level, to reading level, combinations of all of those things. Like I mentioned, we do update it every single day. So if a book is out of print, if it's something that you've read about but it's really not published yet, we give you that information, and you can keep an ongoing wish list or a consideration file on there. And as you get ideas, suggestions, recommendations, requests, you can just pop up your list and add it. So you always want to have a list ready to go just in case some money falls your way at the last minute. I always suggest that you've got a consideration file started or a list, because sometimes a principal will walk in and out of the clear blue say, I've got some funds, they need to be spent by Friday.
Our give you 48 hours. I've had it
right.
that quick,
mm-hmm.
too.
You print out your list, you look like a superstar.
Exactly. Exactly. And I like the way that you have the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're giving the reviews online and that you can read them in the, I know I still read all the time. I read reviews in the magazines, but it's nice to know that I can go if I'm not sure and see if somebody else has also reviewed the book that I've read in Booklist or somewhere else.
Right.
And see what they have said. If there's something, or if it's an author that I know sometimes in young adult literature, you know, I like the author, but sometimes they get a little, you know, beyond what I might want to put on my shelf for my particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to read what somebody else has said
right.
about it if I can't put my hands on the book to read it before I order it. Because
mm-hmm.
sometimes I'll just go and read the book and decide on my own. All right, as I look at my clock.
I know. Where did that half hour go?
Yes, you know, and I'm hoping we have covered everything that my students need to know, because I can't emphasize how nice it is to have a sales rep like you, Laura. I've, you know, worked with you for years, and it's worth it for you. You know,
well,
I mean, I know you have a huge territory, but you always get back to me if I have a problem, because in all honesty, they do make mistakes once in a while. You know,
oh, yeah.
Maybe it's a little mistake, or like the one where I had the different language
mm-hmm.
inside the picture book. That was more of a big mistake.
We've made big ones and we've made little ones. I think the thing to keep in mind is work with a company
mm-hmm.
that you can know that you can get your problem fixed, whether it's big or little. And don't feel like you've got to work with every company out there. When you all get out into your libraries, you're
mm-hmm.
going to have 13 people knocking on your door. Select a couple of companies that you can trust, that you feel comfortable working with, and stick with those. Don't
exactly.
don't feel like that every person that knocks on your door that you've got to throw something their way. It's okay to say no.
Right, exactly. And I'll be honest, I've always said I'll talk. You know, when you come, I talk to Follett. There are other people. You know, I have my secretary answer the phone if I'm lucky. She knows if it's Follett, I answer the phone. Other times, you know, I may be busy and I have to get back to them because I usually am busy. But,
right.
you know, if you have called, and I didn't mention the nice posters you bring along and the reading mm-hmm. lists you can put together to help new librarians if they know they have a topic, they're not quite sure, the curriculum's changing. They need to find a set of books. Follett is so nice about putting together a list of titles. And then you can go through and see if these are what you want. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But some of them will be helpful. Also, for your Mark Twain and your Show Me lists and the Gateway books, you are really nice about putting those lists together and sending them out so that librarians can put together an order quickly. For that, because you want to try to see if you can get them, because sometimes Missouri's putting a book on the list, so is Illinois, so is Kansas, so is Texas, and
that's
the publishers don't know that, so you want to go out and order the books, if possible, right away.
Right.
So, well, I think we have run over, and I'm going to thank you very much for being my guest tonight, and I hope my students have learned something from our conversation. It's hard to describe book bindings when you're not actually looking at the book, but maybe the next time they're in the library, they'll open the book up and take a look at exactly how it's put together. That does make a difference in a school.
Well, good. And if they have any additional questions, feel free to, you know, email me or whatever, and we'll try and get everything addressed. I just wish everybody the best of luck. And once you're in the library, I don't think you'll regret it one bit. It's so much fun.
It is. It absolutely is. And no 2 days are alike.
No,
that's
the beauty
of it. Why I love
it.
You know, and it's so much fun working with kids and working with books, and it's just fun. Well, thank you once again.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.